All right. Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak. Tim, I'm excited about every conversation I think that we have on this podcast, but I love this one.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about something that's really important. What I notice when I'm talking with people about leadership development or building leaders, it's like as soon as we think about, man, these kids need something, the very first inclination we have is to create an event.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the thing we think about first whenever we're thinking about leadership. But leadership's far more than that.
Absolutely. Well, you and I both have gone to school and gone to leadership conferences, the Staley Lecture Series, in college, maybe in high school, it was an assembly or something. But yeah, we are good at doing conferences in America.
Yes.
I mean, you could open up a magazine and find a conference for every week of the year, you know. But Andrew, as you're noting right now, we overestimate the power of an event and we underestimate what happens after that event, which is when our life changes.
We rely on a guru on the stage, right?
Yeah, right.
And instead, that kind of gets us in trouble and it hurts us in the long run, mm-hmm. I think. We have to think about leadership differently. And we always say leadership is events and process. That's one of like...
It's both.
It's our core... One of our core values, I think, here at Growing Leaders. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
But here's what I really love about you is when you say, hey, it's this, not this, one of the things that's really great about the way that you approach this is you help people understand what we actually mean when we talk about developing leaders.
Yeah.
And that's what we want
to
talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. I did an article some years ago called The Role of Cotton Candy. Sounds pretty random, but here was my point. I remember growing up, going to amusement parks and always wanting a big, you know, wad of, I don't know what you call it, wad of cotton candy.
Yeah.
Cotton candy was great because it was sweet, it was tasty, it was so good, but it was never filling. In fact, if you ate too much of it, it was not really good for
your stomach. Worse, not better.
Right. Yeah. What you needed was real food afterwards. And I think events are like a little like cotton candy. It's sweet, it's fun, it's so cool that day.
Yeah.
But they don't really fill us up. They motivate us maybe for a day, but they can't mature us over the long haul. So in addition to cotton candy, you need green beans, you need protein, you need the other food that actually nourishes us. And so today what we want to talk about, Andrew, is what is that process that follows the event? How should it look? If follow-up is key, how do you do that to really build an authentic leader?
Love that. Love that. Okay, so I think there's a really great tool that you've developed. We call it the leadership development cycle. And I want you to just kind of walk us through this so the listeners of the podcast, you know, maybe they're taking notes or whatever, if they can kind of walk through and see what does it look like from start to finish to say, I want to develop this young man or this young woman, but how do I do it? How do I get started? What happens next? What are the steps?
Yeah.
Walk us through that.
Good. Okay. So I think really, if we're going to do it well, the first step really needs to be assessment and preparation. And by that, I simply mean before we ever grab a student and say we're going to build a leader here, we need to sit down with perhaps a strategic team of people and say, what are we actually calling a leader? What's the outcome?
I love that.
And then let's assess where we are right now. Are we doing anything good right now? Of course we are. But what are we doing that's working and not working? So it's got to begin with assessment. When we get on the phone with different schools around the country and really the world, the first thing we do is let's assess where we are, what's going on, and what still needs to be.
Yeah, because you wouldn't try and create a leadership program unless you felt like something was missing, right?
Absolutely.
So this is you recognizing what's missing, but even calling it out specifically and us establishing new goals and you know, new different things that we're trying to build.
That's right, exactly. So you assess current reality and you evaluate where do we want to go with this? What's the outcome?
Love it.
The next step then, we simply call mentor training. I have believed for years and years and years that young leaders are not raised up in massive crowds.
Mm.
You can't do it in an assembly with 1,000 kids in a gymnasium. You can motivate them there, maybe with a good speaker and maybe a band or whatever you got. But I think you got to have relationships. In fact, students that we talk to, you know this, in focus groups, they long for real relationships with adults.
Which can't happen with 1,000 people in a room.
No, it can't. That's right. So we often have said more time with less people equals greater impact.
Wow.
More time with less people. So mentoring communities are really where they're formed, and we think you have to prepare the mentors.
Love it.
I think we all believe in mentoring, but sometimes we don't know how to do it with a kid that's a screenager, you know, and he's got earbuds in and you're going, I don't get this. So we need to really prepare those mentors.
Yeah, and maybe you find a really incredible adult, and one of the things that you could think is, well, I've got a really great person here, so let's just let them loose, and they'll figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
But what we have noticed, and we see this all the time with the work that we do, training the mentor, the leader, is actually the critical transaction.
No doubt.
If we don't do that right, everything else could fall apart.
Yeah, that's right. One phrase we like to use is there is no life change without life exchange. So we want to mentor relationships are where life is exchanged between a mentee and a mentor.
Love it.
So that's step two. Step three is a catalytic event. Mm. So we are four events.
Yeah.
Most students need some conference or some retreat or some event to kind of turn the light bulb on.
Yes.
You know, whatever the subject is. We just are talking about leadership right now. But I believe when you have a catalytic event, something great happens. Some great truth is shared or principle is shared. Some ideal is passed on. Maybe even a vision is cast. Mm. That's where they get the idea, wow, I could be a world changer or I could be a leader here. And it's at that event that that idea clicks with them. And then on the heels of that event is where you start this process we've been talking about.
I love it. Yeah. And going back to your cotton candy analogy, like somebody's going to show up at the fair for the cotton candy,
right?
Yeah. But you know, after you get them there, there's lots of other things you could get them to do.
Exactly.
And I think the same is true in this leadership development process. The kid that walks in the door, I think of doing an event about a year ago, and I had a little eighth grade girl who came up to me afterwards and said, I never knew I could be a leader, right?
Yeah.
And it's like she had been in leadership classes for that entire semester, but for some reason, though she was reading a book that said The Art of Self-Leadership, she hadn't gotten to believe that I'm a leader. So that catalytic event kind of said, this is possible. And now the process, you know, comes after.
Yeah. And one thing we believe in, Andrew, at Growing Leaders is you should expose every student to leadership.
Mm.
We know they're not all going to be CEOs of a company or president or chairman of the board, but we believe everyone is a leader inside because they have influence. And I think every student should learn how to leverage their influence for a worthwhile cause. So in that instance, here was that young girl that came up and said, nobody's ever told me I could be a leader. Well, to her own level, she's going to go to a place now, maybe better than she would have before because somebody said, you can do this.
Yeah, at least leading herself,
if
nothing else.
Minimally, that's right, All right, so at that catalytic event, we're giving the cotton candy has drawn them into the gym or the auditorium, and we're having a great time, but we're exposing them to the idea that they could be leaders. Following that event, are resources.
Mm.
We believe that resources actually help that event to stick.
Yeah.
Now, in my growing up years, it was a book, and books are still available, but as you know, we're into an electronic age. It can be a resource is any tool that you put in their hands or their mind that allows the event to linger in their memory and actually shape their habits and attitudes.
Mm.
So resources are those things. And by the way, that's what we specialize in. Yeah. We actually call ourselves the process people.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, this is what habitudes are to us, right?
Yeah.
This is how we think about that. But what I love is when you think about what you're going to do with follow-up resources, the most successful events are the ones that set up the resource before the event's even over, right?
Absolutely.
There should be a connection there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people miss that. I'm going to do something really exciting, introduce them to the people who are going to be leading their mentoring groups, and then they're going to go do something completely different from this event.
Yeah.
But we got to have some sort of connection there too.
Sorry to interrupt. I think what should be done, optimally speaking, is at the end of the event, someone hops up and in a very authentic tone says, some of you really caught the big idea here. You resonated with what we just said from the stage. And you're thinking, I want to go deeper. I want to go further. I want to do this thing called change the world.
Yeah.
On your way out, there'll be a place to sign up for one of these mentoring communities. However they do that, you do connect it. You have to connect it.
Yes.
It's on the heels of this excitement where I've got goosebumps or something, you know. I want to do something. Give them a chance to do something.
Mm.
So maybe, let's say, 500 students come to the auditorium for the event. Maybe only 250 sign up. Well, that's 250.
That's
a great start.
Yes.
So maybe you have, I don't know, 50 groups of five. So you need mentors. You need those small group leaders to lead that ongoing process. And yeah, one example would be habitudes. We don't think it's the only thing, but it's been a great conversation starter on leadership.
Yeah. Especially connecting different generations together.
Yeah.
Too,
so. No doubt about it.
That's
great. Pictures.
All right. What's the next one?
All right. So after follow-up resources, you have the mentoring and learning communities. So now you actually decide we're going to meet this night or this day or this morning for a set amount of time. So we have found that a semester-long mentoring community is realistic. Some students might think that's a little long, but we think a semester, about 15 weeks, 16 weeks is a good amount of time. Maybe you meet 12 times during that 16 weeks, but you need enough weeks that they can talk about these principles that perhaps were introduced at the event and now create discussion, application. Now it's actually changing my habits and attitudes.
Love it. Love it. It's a time sort of to personalize some of the elements too, because you have that smaller community. So now it's possible for me to say, okay, we heard that idea on the stage, and now let's talk about it more in depth and figure out what does this look like for us, and how does it shape my attitude and my habits that I can practice even this week, right? It starts, the smaller you get, the more applicable it becomes.
Yeah. And I would say the smaller the community, the more apt students are to open up. Mm. I'm less apt to open up with a group of 15 or 30 or 40. I'm more apt in a group of three or four, you know, so that's why I'm really an advocate of small groups.
Yeah.
I learned from my friend Andy Stanley years ago, people learn better in circles than in rows.
That's great.
And most of the time we're sitting in rows, staring at the back of the head of somebody in front of us.
Yeah. Well, this is where, you know, there's a lot of leaders out there who are kind of like, hey, give me a microphone and a stage and this will all go really well. Yeah. But this is where that element of, you know, how are you thinking? How are you strategizing? Yeah. Are you planning out logistically how things are going to go and who's going to be in charge and when is it going to happen? And I think there's an element of leadership that requires those elements too.
I would even volley back with this thought. When most people plan an event at a school or an organization of any kind, they spend 90% of their time planning the event and 10% of their time on the follow-up. Mm-hmm. I think it should be the opposite.
Wow.
I think you plan a good event for sure, but 90% of your time should be when the life is going to change. And most of the time, our lives don't change after events. We flippantly say, oh, that event just changed my life. Maybe, maybe not, mostly not, because we go back home and the 10 days later, we're doing the very same lifestyle we had done before we ever heard about that great concept.
Yeah.
So lots of time should be put into planning this ongoing circle of people that learn.
And for some of people listening, this is built in, right?
Yeah.
If you're in a school, you've got advisement. It's
That's right. It's
there, it's ready. But for other people, this is going to take a little bit of
little
bit more work and thought and all those kinds of things. But it's worth it. It really is worth it.
Well, and let me just toss in, you mentioned advisement period. Most K-12 schools have advisement period. Most higher ed institutions have places where you're in smaller communities at some point with some affinity group. Mm-hmm. I believe sports teams, what if you took the first 10, 15 minutes of practice?
Yeah.
Because you believe habits and attitudes are just as important as strength and conditioning of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't believe that, just do practice and good luck with that.
Yeah.
But you and I both know Nick Saban works on the habits and attitudes of his young men.
Yes, he does.
So all that to say, I believe this is, well, don't just do business meetings with your student council or student government. Do personal growth with your student council and then do business. This keeps them around longer and keeps them growing.
Obviously, we're passionate about
this
subject,
yes,
but we should keep going. So.
I've got a slight opinion on this. Okay. All right. So the next step in the leadership development cycle, we think, are training experiences.
Mm.
Here's why we put this in. In a small group, you're having great conversations about people and relationships and vision and strategy and problem solving and conflict resolution. But sometimes there needs to be specialized training for certain aspects of leadership. I just visited 2 months ago West Point. You know, what an incredible leadership institution.
No kidding.
For young men and women who are going into the Army. But they had special training experiences for specialized things they were going to be doing. And it couldn't just be done in a small group discussion. It was not just a discussion. It was imparting knowledge and insight into something that you're going to need to know.
Mm.
So we believe training experiences are important. They can be sprinkled in throughout the small group experience along the way.
Yeah, so this would be like if you have a specific challenge you want to overcome or a specific principle you want to really focus on, this is where that terminology, we're not thinking lecture, we're thinking lab, right?
Yeah.
So we would build a lab around that specific subject. There's lots of subjects we want to talk about, but on this one that's so important to us, we want to make sure we have a training experience around this.
Absolutely. So when I was leading college students at San Diego State University, we had our small groups going for leaders, but we would bring in a specialist like a counselor in town, a wonderful psychologist that came in and talked about conflict resolution.
Mm.
She was really good at that.
Yeah.
We brought a business person in that was a special training experience around vision and strategy. So you can see how you might bring a specialist in for those situations that just know more than anybody else in town about that particular subject, and yet they don't have to give their whole half a year, you know, with your small groups. They just kind of do a special ops
training. And it creates a certain degree of intensity and excitement around that subject. That's
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. Yep.
It.
All right. So the next step is opportunities and apprenticeships. The reason this is next, Andrew, is because I think there's nothing more frustrating to a student than to learn a lot of leadership ideas and then get no place to practice them.
Yeah.
So we believe you need to have places for them to go do what you've talked about. So perhaps a lot of these small groups are meeting, but you need to have, maybe it's a small study group that they're going to lead, or maybe it's a student council position, student government. Maybe it's a skill thing, like they're going to run the media and the soundboard.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be a leader to run that team. I think this is so essential. I think we're really good at lecture and not so good at lab, and that's what you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
We need to make sure we have opportunities.
Well, yeah, and I think the key word there is opportunity, right? You might say, hey, we went from 500 to 250 from the event to the process, but we may go from 250 to 100 in terms
yes.
of not every kid might take you up on that
yes.
opportunity. But the important thing is that once you've introduced them to leadership pre-position,
yeah.
you want to offer them sort of a channel for them to develop that and practice that and all those kinds of things, because the last thing you want is a student who really wants to put
yeah.
this into practice and they've got no outlet.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go find an outlet somewhere else
yeah.
probably.
No doubt about it. They're going to find a place to do something.
Yeah.
We might as well have them doing the right thing. So I remember one specific season in San Diego, going back to the San Diego State students, we were training so many leaders, we didn't have enough positions
wow.
for them. But that was a good problem to have.
Yeah.
They were finding things to do in the community, in the city, and they were coming up with their own ideas. I love that problem.
Yeah.
May I have that problem every year? Too many leaders, not enough, they'll find problems to solve.
Yes.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
So
great.
Good. All right. The final step before the leadership quest is post-assessments. We at Growing Leaders just believe, as many educators do, that you need to assess beforehand and after.
Yep.
Have we done any good?
Yep.
And if so, what good have we done? So we believe it's just great to evaluate, to have an exit interview in this cycle, to even give them some testing, some test questions on, did they learn the social-emotional learning that
yeah.
they were supposed to learn?
That's great.
Yeah,
yeah, I think the whole goal here is improvement, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We want to figure out what did we succeed in, what did we not succeed in, or what could we get better in? And the more clarity you have around that, the more you're able to adjust and pivot and reach students better than you did before.
No doubt about it. So, Andrew, I know we've been talking a lot here. We usually talk a lot here.
Yeah.
But what we just talked through was a cycle that's on a piece of paper. We're making this available, are we not, to our listeners?
We are, yeah. What's going to be really awesome is if you're listening to this right now, then you can go to our website under our free tab. We're going to put up this leadership development cycle as sort of a downloadable PDF. And so you don't just have to listen to this.
Yeah.
You can go look at it yourself and figure out, is my leadership process, is it built in mm-hmm. such a way that it's like this, where you
yeah.
know you start with the catalytic event, you're
yeah.
assessing, and you got the great process and all those things. So we want you to go download this and then use it as a guide to
yeah.
sort of follow along.
Absolutely.
With.
The reason I pointed that out is because I'm looking at one right now. It is a cycle.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to assessments at the end of the cycle, they have a chance to either go out, maybe graduate and go do something as a young leader, or jump right back into the cycle. They became one of the mentors for the next batch of kids coming through.
Love that.
So it really becomes an ongoing, I think this is how leadership pipelines are supposed to work,
an
ongoing cycle where the seniors are pouring into the freshmen, the juniors are pouring into the freshmen.
Yeah.
And then as they become upperclassmen, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
This becomes an expectation for the young leaders.
I love that. And we always say the ultimate test of how well we've developed them is whether or not they practice what we've been
yeah.
telling them.
Yeah.
So you're either sending them on that
yep.
leadership quest
yep.
or you're sort of bringing them back and training them as your next mentors.
Yeah.
I love that. I
yeah.
love that. Well, like we said, we want to make sure if you want this resource, go to our website, growingleaders.com. You can get this under the free tab. It's called the Leadership Development Cycle. So that's definitely something you want to check out. But what we're also excited about are some new images, Tim, that you've been working on. A lot of you are familiar with Habitudes, and that's been a really helpful resource for a long time. We've been saying,
yeah.
hey, we have over 100 Habitude images. Now we're saying we have 120 Habitude
yeah.
images.
Yeah.
So, walk us through, because
sure.
I know you wanted
yeah.
to share just a couple of those.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just whet your appetite. This resource I am more excited about than anything I can remember, because while we believe in teaching leadership principles with images, because pictures are worth 1,000 words, they get student engagement, these particular images are exactly describing the kind of leader we want to see at the end of the journey. And
yeah.
I think listeners would say, absolutely. When I hear those are the kinds of people that I want to develop here. So one of them, Andrew, that we have laughed at and learned together was quarterbacks and referees. If you stop and think for just a minute, every football game has two very obvious leaders on the field. There's the referee. Those are the guys with striped shirts that blow whistles and throw flags and yell out things at players.
Yeah.
Then there's the quarterback. Now, that's actually the one we come to watch. Both are on the field, but that quarterback's moving the ball down the field, motivating his team, handing the ball off, scoring eventually, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
We believe that very often you start in a leadership role as a quarterback because you're excited and you got vision, but so often power kind of gets to us, and pretty soon we start calling out fouls and telling people where they're out of bounds, and we turn into a referee. Parents will say this: I started raising my children as a quarterback by teenagers. I'm refereeing all the time, you know? And so we just believe nobody goes to a football game to see a referee, and nobody's going to come around any leadership unless you're more like a quarterback than a referee.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Imagine if your students picked up that personality trait, that characteristic, and had the attitude of a quarterback, not a referee.
Yeah. I love this next one. I'll make this brief, but this is a fun one. We've talked about this a lot. Stethoscopes and treatments. Stethoscopes and treatment. Now, we immediately recognize that. That's medical equipment. But no doctor worth his or her salt would walk into the room where you're waiting to be treated and just hand you a drug and say, this is penicillin. You're going to love it. It's helped millions worldwide. Try it out.
Yeah, it's going to solve whatever you got.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't say that because they know they have been trained to take 10 minutes, at least 10 minutes, I've talked to doctors, to diagnose. You know, they say, show me your eyes, show me your mouth, show me your ears. Let me put this stethoscope to your chest and listen to your heartbeat. And then I will know how to lead you. Bingo. I think in today's world especially, we have got to be using a stethoscope before we ever offer a treatment to a follower on a team. I think when they feel heard, I think when they feel listened to. I've often said to parents, children do not have the innate need to get their own way. They do have the innate need to be heard. And I think in that stethoscope period of time, as leaders, we're listening, we're empathetic.
Yeah, that's a huge word.
Oh my gosh, yes. In fact, I think students need to learn this. We're hoping that student leaders learn to do that. So in our case, show me your eyes might be, let me hear what you've seen or experienced. Show me your ears. What have you heard that informs your behavior?
Yeah.
Let me see your mouth. What do your words reveal to me that you've gone through? Let me listen to your heart. What's going on inside of you? And then where does it hurt? I think we need to understand the pain of people to lead them well.
Yeah.
So
the more we empathize and understand, the more we'll be kind of more knowledgeable on how to lead our team members well.
Absolutely. One last one I'll just whet your appetite with. These are habitudes for life-giving leaders. And again, did I mention? I'm really excited about these.
Yes, you are.
Here's another image. It's called the Golden Gate Paradox. The reason I call this the paradox is because for about 20 years I lived in California. And of course, California's famous for a lot of things. But one of them is the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. When that was first built in 1932, it was in the thick of the Great Depression. And so many workers, many men showed up for work to help build the bridge that weren't trained engineers. They were just helpers. But when they were sent up on the bridge, they realized right away, I'm so scared of falling, because most of the time bridges would lose dozens of guys in the course of building the bridge.
Yeah.
It's just over the months and years, you're going to lose some guys. But the Golden Gate Paradox is this. The workers had petitioned the man in charge, the foreman, and said, we really would do better, I think, if we built a net underneath this bridge. Well, he hesitated at first because he thought, we're already behind schedule, we're already late, and now this is going to take more time to build a net. Furthermore, it's going to cost us some money, probably hundreds of, and it did. It ended up costing about $300,000 to build this net, and that was a lot of money back. It's a lot of money today.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money back then. But alas, he said, we're going to build the net. Well, building the net, here's the paradox. Once they got the net built, the workers began working again. They were faster because they were no longer worried about falling.
Yeah.
And it sped up their work. And they actually finished on time and on budget. Mm. So the paradox is this. Leaders, if you'll put a safety net under your leader, your team, under those people following, knowing there's grace, there is forgiveness. Mm. There is,
There's room to fail.
There's room to fail. That's what I'm trying to say. Room to fail. You might actually accelerate the productivity of that team. And isn't that what we all want?
I love
that. But it's a Golden Gate Paradox.
Love that. Well, here's where this is most exciting for us is it's not just about ideas we come up here with here in our office. We want to put these into the hands of students everywhere. And so we're doing that. We're coming out with a brand new course called Habitudes for Building Student Leaders. And it's specifically designed for people who are building this leadership development cycle. We talked about when you get from the event and the very next step is a follow-up resource.
Yeah.
We think think this could be the perfect resource to develop those student leaders.
No doubt.
So we're really excited about releasing that. If you're interested in what could it look like to use Habitudes for Building Student Leaders with your students, it's got these all new images that Tim has just finished that we're really excited about. What you're going to want to do is go to growingleaders.com. You can get all the information on that new course there. And we just think it's going to be really helpful as a tool to help you build your students' habits and attitudes of a life-giving leader. And that's going to be a great tool. So as always, we love hearing from you. We love getting your comments and questions and different things you want us to talk about on the podcast. Shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. If you want more information on any Habitudes course, but especially this Habitudes for Building Student Leaders course, you can check that out at growingleaders.com. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go download that leadership development cycle, and we'll see you next time.